Minnesota Reads on Northland Morning is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. We are delighted to welcome Dr. Alexis Elder into our studios again this morning. We always have the most fascinating conversations with you. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So a couple of exciting things actually coming up. There is a celebration of authors at UMD, and that is actually taking place this afternoon at 3 o'clock, and there are a bunch of presenters. You, of course, are on that list, and it's just kind of a celebration of the written word, of the kind of academic research. And then, you know, we were just talking just a moment ago about people who have this rich internal life, and they think a lot of things and they do a lot of things, but the importance of the piece of communicating what you're doing. And we were laughing and talking about it in a more practical sense. And yet, when you are at a university, you hear the phrase publish or perish, but it really is important to talk about and to communicate what it is that you're doing. And it's not just this is part of my job description. Talk about the importance of publishing and communicating the work that you're doing as a professor to the wider world.
Sure. No, you're absolutely right. There's a tendency, I work in philosophy, right, where the stereotype is the lone thinker in their armchair. And many of us who are drawn to the field are a little bit introverted. But you get stuck inside your own head. And it's only when you start talking to and interacting with other people and sharing ideas that things really take off. And the paper that I'm going to be talking about this afternoon actually came out of a series of conversations with different people and then was sort of originally written as a little bit of a gift to the one of my home conferences, right? So there's a variety of different, like, important academic conferences, but many of us will have just sort of reunion type conferences. Everybody goes.
Oh, and these are people that you know and you've been in contact with, and you get to see them once a year, once every 2 years, whatever
exactly.
It might be.
Exactly. So year after year, we go back, we have these kind of sustained conversations. So this was a little bit of a, like, here's a bunch of stuff we've all been talking about. Here's a fresh take on it. What do you think? And then it ended up getting published, and, you know, the conversation continues. But for me, I just couldn't do work in solitude. It's important to have some downtime to sit around and think by yourself, but then you need to get out, talk about it, and share in order for it to develop.
I was amazed. I've been listening. I have a philosophy minor, okay? So I've been listening to the impeachment hearings when I can't help it. And I was in the car for quite a bit earlier this week and was listening. And I kept thinking, except I couldn't remember the guy's name. I kept thinking about a philosopher I was familiar with, an idea I was familiar with. And I said, this is what we need. And all of a sudden, somebody mentioned John Rawls, and I
yes.
went, oh, they're talking about it.
Right.
You don't think about these ideas, or you shouldn't, I don't believe, in a silo. It is so important that these ways of thinking or at looking of things become part of a person's toolbox that they have handy,
right,
so that they can talk about these things. And all of this, the research and the things going on, even here at our relatively small university, could be life-changing for folks if they knew about it, if they said, you know, this is a really interesting thing is going on, I want to learn more about it to wrap it into my own life, or I think I want to do that for a job somehow, whatever it might be. Your new book is called Friendship, Robots, and Social Media, False Friends and Second Selves. That's information, I mean, just even from the title, that you go, I want to read about this. This is relevant to how I live my life. Talk about it a little bit.
Sure. I'm glad you think it's relevant. That was one of my hopes here. So I have several loves in philosophy. One is ancient Greek philosophy and looking at ancient traditions generally, but I'm also very interested in emerging technologies. So this is a book where I try to bring those things together, look back at some older traditions and discussions about the value of friendship and interpersonal communication and relationships, and then see how that can inform these sort of, groundbreaking, new life-transforming and relationship-transforming technologies like social robotics and social media. and use that to sort of dig a little bit beneath the surface. So, for example, a lot of folks complain that what's happening on social media is somehow fake or not real. It's not the same as face-to-face communication. And I'll grant you the last, but we've been, you know, communicating in various sort of technologically mediated ways for a long time, including, I would point out, right now.
It is face-to-face.
Well, face-to-face.
We are.
Yeah.
Right. How listening on listening audience. I guess I was thinking, all of a sudden I started thinking about written letters, and I used to write letters. I had a friend, and she was also a letter writer, and 30, 40-page letters would go back and forth, you know, every month or so. And in that sense, I could have probably really given her utter misinformation about my life because she wasn't even going to see any pictures of me.
Right. Now, to be fair, lots of folks lie to each other face-to-face.
That's true, too.
And there's, you know, whole social practices around just sort of, you know, white lies or glossing over when somebody asks how you're doing. You're supposed to say fine, thanks, and not actually answer with how you're doing. So I'll grant that we do have reason to be skeptical sometimes of each other, but I'm trying to sort of look to older resources about how to deal
right.
with the kinds of masks that we wear and the ways that we can foster a personal connection rather than just say, oh, it's new and different, therefore it's bad or a corruption of something, and sort of just take a deep dive into how people are actually using it to connect and disconnect and get a sense of where there's value and where there are problems to be wary of and see where we can go from there.
I think about it walking down the hall of a college, and we used to look each other in the eye, and we used to say hi, and maybe that gave us the sense that we were communicating and connecting better than we were. And if we did want a social interaction, we did have to, somebody had to get brave and say, you know, something to somebody. Now there isn't even any pretense of trying to engage with other human beings because we are all walking down the hallways staring at our phones.
To some degree, although there's, you know, I always enjoy a good meme. There's some nice ones going around about folks these days with their faces buried in their phones. And then, you know, you show a picture of a train from 50 or 70 years ago and everyone's got their faces buried in their newspapers.
In their newspapers,
so.
Yep. Exactly. However, as a person who has read and walked for many, many years, people the reading walking thing has never really caught on big time.
Right.
I'm just saying, and I busted up my ankle once as a result, so I can kind of get why. I do remember, though, walking with my Walkman into my advisor's office once, and she said, take that thing off your head. Get those out of your ears. What are you listening to? And she snatched the headphones and listened. I had Chopin's Nocturnes. And
nice.
So she looked at me like, oh, all right, I'll let you live this time. But, you know, again, so we had been employing some of those technologies.
Yep.
But now it's just so in your face.
Right.
It's really hard. And for those of us of a certain age, the change has come so fast.
Right. And this seems to be something that's very sort of interest to my students. I think initially there was this presumption that younger generations were going to have more trouble integrating these technologies into their lives. And I won't say it's been flawless, but for many kids, there's this real frustration with parents and seniors being buried in their phones. Like the kids recognize the value to some extent of face-to-face interaction, or many of them do. And so there's this like discussion around not should we get rid of cell phones or social media, but how do we sort of successfully manage both of these information streams? What kinds of etiquette practices or social expectations should we have? And a lot of, you know, frustration at parents who just disappear into their phones, which I think is really interesting, right? The ways that we guessed that these technologies would unfold sometimes reveal more about our sort of background assumptions than
absolutely.
The way the world is.
And how, is there another time in history, I've wondered, perhaps the invention of the automobile, where there seemed to be such a dramatic dividing line between those who grew up with it and those who did not, and how they choose to use it. I know that as the generation that's sort of straddling this, I embrace the new tech and I love it. My mom checks her email once a day. Yes, my mother has email. Yes, she's on Facebook, but she checks once a day and then it's done. And I'll say, Mom, you've got to see this thing I sent you. And she said, I'll see it tomorrow. No, you got to blah, 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 blah. No, I've shut the computer down today. Like, you know, like I have to go out there and crank the thing to get it started. But there, it's interesting to be at this societal junction where things are just changing so dramatically. And I think what your research is doing and what academics all across the nation are doing, they are taking a deep dive. They do have a background so that they're not just guessing off the top of their heads. You've already been trained at looking at these things, and you are producing research and information about how we can navigate these waters that really is important, and yet it may or may not show up on a New York Times bestseller list.
Right, right. And I think that's one of the tricky things is many folks are interested in these conversations, but they're taking place in such different arenas that it can be sort of difficult to figure out how to pull them all together. And that's why I think things like, you know, radio stations' willingness to reach out to nerdy academics and let us talk about stuff is so important, because we do need, you know, in defense of academia, like I said, my work comes out of these sustained relationships with other folks interested in the same things, so we can go deeper. But it's also important to sort of step back and interface with, you know, broader sections of the community, whether it's in the classroom or, you know, discussions with the public or even this afternoon's event. I've already made some fantastic interdisciplinary research connections from previous events like this, where folks in different programs and different schools can sort of go, oh, you're working at that, on that too, from this different angle. And then we, you know, go out for coffee and start brainstorming, and then it takes off. And that's just fabulous.
It really is. Do you and your colleagues ever feel that, you know, how can we get the word out about this? I mean, how can we let people in our community know, if you're interested in, you know, reading more or learning more about these connections in social media, that I've got a, you know, and I'm not talking about book sales necessarily, but, mm-hmm. you know, I've got a book, or you can access the PDF, and this is how you access the PDF, and making this info, you know, letting people know that it's here, doing public events that are more geared and marketed and to the general public, or just letting folks know these resources are here and they're available and this is how you tap into them.
Right. And I think access is a huge issue right now in academia. So, like, there have been a number of discussions around open access journal articles. Many of the venues where we publish scholarly literature, they're really expensive. You need to be affiliated with a university library that has the budget to purchase access to them. And I think that's in many ways a shame and can be very frustrating. That said, there's in my field, there's been more and more interest in public philosophy, right? Making works accessible to the public and having these kinds of open conversations, anything from, you know, writing op-eds or sort of giving public talks through a friend of mine does. She works in video game ethics, and she does an Ask the Ethicist booth at one of the big gaming conventions.
Oh,
just sort of like having these other resources out there to not to sort of silo ourselves too much and have these broader conversations. And I think UMD has been doing a fantastic job of hosting a variety of different public events where folks can just come by and hear, you know, here's things that folks are working on. So, you know, keep an eye on the events calendar.
So if authors and new reading material is your thing, tonight's author celebration begins at 3 p.m. It's at the Catherine A. Martin Library up in that beautiful rotunda up on the fourth floor. And we'll get some links set up so that folks can find out a little bit more information. Alexis, you and I are going to have to go out and have coffee because I have so many ideas right now.
Excellent.
And we have to get together. We have to brainstorm. We have to be nerdy. I'm not really an academic, but we have to be nerdy philosophy geeks together.
There are lots of excellent ways to be a nerd. I support this.
Yes! I'm so glad. Alexis Elder, our guest this morning on Minnesota Reads here on 103.3 KUMD. It is 8:36. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.